Welcome back to another episode of Millennialism. It's been really great watching this podcast grow. In fact, it is now being listened to in 10 different countries around the world, which I think is pretty cool. We live in a world where basically anyone from anywhere can start a movement, gather people around a certain issue, organize events, and start riots even. The accessibility we have, not only to the internet and technology, but by extension to each other around the world, has significantly changed our lives in ways we can't even begin to imagine. Obviously, we can imagine some of them. We can just stay connected to everyone around the globe, basically. But in today's episode, I talk with Dr. Ellen Bernard about civic media and how it has changed over time. Dr. Bernard has a PhD focused in culture and communication and recently published her first book, Contemporary Punk Rock Communities, Scenes of Inclusion and Dedication, which I will link in the description. So if you're interested, you should definitely check it out. I will order my copy as soon as I can. Media and technology are subjects that continue to interest and fascinate me, and it's been very interesting to think about how it may affect our lives in the future, and even how it affects our lives right now. I have voiced some pretty strong opinions about the negative impacts of social media in the past, but through this conversation, it becomes pretty obvious that while social media has its issues, it's also an incredibly powerful tool for marginalized groups and people living in oppression to get their voices heard. Dr. Bernard shares some interesting stories about that, and I think you'll enjoy everything else she has to say as well. Remember to share this podcast with your family and friends. I release new episodes every Friday, but make sure to subscribe so you never miss anything. Please reach out to me if you have any requests or ideas for guests or topics you'd like me to cover. But yeah, anyway, I hope you'll enjoy this episode with Dr. Ellen Bernard. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Yep.
You've been one of my professors here at my school. I can tell you now that I'm about to graduate that you've been one of my favorite professors. Thank you. I've heard a lot of people say that they really love your classes as well. So it was a no-brainer to have you on.
Well, happy to be here.
Yeah. So the class I had you in was civic media, mm-hmm. which is kind of the main topic I want to talk to you about today. But first, do you want to just talk a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what you've studied, what you're doing, if you're doing any research right now?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Allentown, Pennsylvania, but I went to grad school at Drexel in Philadelphia, and I've stayed since. I got my PhD in culture, communication, and media studies from Drexel, and my research is largely focused on punk rock communities, subculture, and kind of all of the stuff that goes into what makes punk subcultures today. So I've tried to investigate a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Did you do your Spotify recap this year?
It wouldn't work for me.
No?
It wasn't loading. I tried on every single computer, my phone. It is not loading for me.
No? That's a shame.
It's killing me. I need to know. But for some reason, it keeps telling me that it's not working, and maybe I'll just have to write a letter.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it would be fun to see all your, punk rock stuff. Are you doing any research right now?
Yeah, so I, back in October, published my dissertation as a book, and that was sort of the big research that I did within the last year. It was a kind of an overview, but looking at what contemporary punk rock communities, and what people in the punk scene are doing today in terms of DIY production and how people identify with the scene. Things like inclusion and diversity were all big topics that were brought up in my interviews with people that I spoke to. So it was kind of a wide range of things.
Yeah, cool. So you've obviously dedicated a lot of time to studying media and communication, but what about it fascinates you the most? Because it's fascinating to me too. So
sure.
I just want to know.
Yeah. So media, I've been studying all sorts of stuff related to the media for a very long time. And I think that some of the big things that have really interested me, at least in relation to punk rock, is sort of how fans use social media as a tool to connect with others and to raise awareness for things. And it kind of overlaps a little bit with civic media in the sense that people in punk communities often use their platforms to voice opinions, to share, raise awareness. And that's really kind of been in my more recent research since the book has been what I've been interested in. I'm actually, so the conference that I'm headed to on Saturday is, my research looks at how GoFundMes have become part of punk, DIY practice is kind of my argument, that people in the punk scene use GoFundMes to raise awareness for their issue, you know, for, you know, the van broke down, so now we need to make, you know, raise some money to get a new van so we can keep touring, or we have medical bills, or whatever the reason is, and that's sort of been an overlap, and kind of actually really interesting in the sense that people are looking to support bands in other ways that aren't like, hey, I'm going to buy a t-shirt, or I'm going to buy merch, but, like, I want to support your cause directly because it's important to me.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing with a lot of YouTubers who try to, because YouTube changed their, like, algorithm a while ago, and I know there was a big, like, uproar about it. So I know a lot of them have, like, Patreon accounts. People support them every month. And I guess that's kind of a good segue into the main topic that I want to talk to you about today, civic media. So just the basic, what is civic media?
Yeah, so civic media is really broad term, right? We kind of talked a little bit about that in class, but it's the idea that we use, you know, various forms of media to a benefit, right? To benefit ourselves, to benefit others, to promote action, and it can be done obviously in a variety of different ways, using Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, GoFundMes, I think are all really, you know, part of the idea of what civic media is, to try to change or create action or something on behalf of the people who follow you.
Yeah. Is it, so is it a new thing or has it been around for a while? Because I can just imagine that, you know, in the last couple of years, especially with social media and just smartphones in general, and, internet maybe especially, that we're just more connected and it's easier to kind of do these like things together, but has it worked, like did it work in a different way before when it was just like traditional media? Or
I think that it's easier now. I mean that we now have access to all kinds of you can go online and look out to see who's doing what on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram in ways that weren't as accessible in the past. I mean, people have always been sort of fighting for what they believe in and finding ways to organize and get together to make these things happen. But social media, I think, facilitates it, right? It makes it easier. And we are, I think, we're much more aware of what's going on further away from us than we ever have been.
Yeah. What do you think the implications of that are, that we're just more aware of what's going on? Not in, just in our like immediate presence, but like around us as well.
Yeah, I think that it's a great thing. I think that we now have the opportunity to kind of move outside of our small bubbles of, you know, the things that we enjoy, the things that we, you know, the people that we follow, but that there's all this stuff out there that that we now have access to. And I think that you learn about different cultures, different communities, because all of that stuff is just, it's just out there. And you see it on Twitter, you see it on Facebook, and it, you know, you're at least, you're aware of more.
Yeah. One of the terms we talked about in class was slacktivism. I remember that very clearly because I think I wrote something about it as well. But I can just imagine, you know, I can just look at my own behavior online. I follow all these causes and supports them, you know, online, but I don't really actually do anything in the real world, which is, I guess, what slacktivism is. But is there any way you can explain it maybe better? And
yeah, I mean, I think that that's exactly what slacktivism is. It's a the idea that we are aware of issues that are going on in the world. Maybe we post about them, but we don't do much to advocate for change, right? That you post the article from the New York Times or from somewhere that you found on Twitter that says something about, you know, how we can change our own behaviors to make things better for the environment, but then not actually going about doing that. And selectivism is that kind of idea that you've done something, but you haven't really done much to evoke change or even change your own personal habits. And, you know, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing, because you're still using social media to bring about awareness. And perhaps in your mind, you're aware that, yeah, maybe my habits need to change, right? And eventually that they will. So I don't think that it's, I think that the word slacktivism really has a negative connotation.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, it does. And you kind of think like, oh, well, you're doing nothing. But I think it's still something, right? I think that even just sharing things on Facebook is helpful enough in raising awareness.
I mean, it still seems like young people nowadays are still very engaged in protests and everything. I mean, I want to get into that a little bit later, but in the last couple of years, we've seen, you know, Black Lives Matter Me Too and even in a way, I guess, Make America Great Again, which was its own movement, not necessarily one that you know, a lot of people support, but at least they have a very strong base.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I had a question like, does it pose a threat to real activism or engagement? But in my mind, like, it doesn't. Yeah. But what do you think?
I think that it, I don't think it poses a threat. I think it could be the easy way out in some cases. So I would encourage people to think before they post and to think about sort of what, like, are you, will, can you perhaps stand behind the, you know, the movement that you're supporting online? Would you go to a rally? Would you make big changes to your lifestyle to support that cause?
Yeah.
And I think that people do. But I think that it's just easy to kind of, you know, this is important, let's do something about it, and then,
yeah,
it, you know, life gets busy, right? We're all very busy, so
it does.
It's just important to kind of think about it in that respect.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I feel too good about myself because I support all these great causes, but yeah, I don't actually do it in real life.
Yeah.
So, but you know, at least in my mind, I like half support it.
Yeah.
Sometimes that feels good enough, which maybe sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. So I definitely want to like get better at actually engaging more in things I believe in and things I want to stand up for.
Right.
Yeah. Are you part of any movements?
I mean, I do, at least in like my own sort of thoughts about, you know, the punk community and stuff. And I think I definitely stand by a lot of the I don't know if you call them movements, but at least the beliefs, the ideologies,
yeah,
that are represented today. You know, I support all of those sorts of beliefs. And I think that, you know, supporting whether it's artists or musicians or, you know, just people in those communities, either by, you know, attending a show or, you know, even buying a t-shirt, right? It's still supporting the cause, supporting the big beliefs of the community. And I think that that works too. I think that that's...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I've been very interested in like the environmental movement,
yeah,
and everything,
absolutely,
in the last couple of years. And I think I've definitely made a change in my, at least like what I buy and where I buy it from. Like, I'm more conscious now about not buying from these huge stores that just mass produce overseas. I try to pick companies that actually try to, you know, make ethical clothing or,
sure,
products or whatever. So I guess in a way that's, yeah, showing support as well.
And I think that we have the ability to find that information.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for sure.
If those resources are available to us, we should be using them to think, oh, you know, where is this coming from? And, you know, is this the most, you know, ethically produced product that I can buy? So
yeah,
we can definitely do that.
So one of the books, or the only book we read in your class, except for all the articles, was a book called Here Comes Everybody, The, mm-hmm, Power of Organizing Without Organization by Clay Shirky. And it's been a while since I read it, so I just wrote down a summary here. I'm,
sure,
going to read it. Clay Shirky sets out to explain how new communication technologies and the people who use them are changing the world we live in. Much of the book is spent describing various social networking / new media sites and exploring their function as a part of an altered vision of social organizing. The internet, Shirky argues, allows users to cut out the middleman. They write their own news stories, they offer their own editorials, they organize their own events, they act in concert to focus on issues of social justice, and in short, the whole world's experiencing a revolution. Do you agree with this, that we're like experiencing a revolution?
Yeah, I think that we are, we're seeing the power of how social media can be used for good in a lot of ways. I think that we use it in ways, and I broke down this example just to talk about here, but March for Our Lives is,
mm-hmm,
an example of how students use their own resources, their own connections, right, to create a very powerful movement, right? It was social media, it was very grassroots, but aimed toward changing the gun lobby, you know, the gun control in our country. So there's something to be said about how we can use these platforms, right, to create our own content, to voice our opinions, our beliefs, and to even directly speak to the politicians or big public figures that could actually work to make something happen. And of course, you saw how this all went down, and then we see how, you know, public figures have responded in the past, and, you know, it wasn't any sort of, it was, you know, it was all done the students who are using their resources to try and start change. And I think they've been very vocal and very effective.
Yeah, for sure. I remember us talking about it a lot in class, mm-hmm. and it's been very fascinating to kind of follow along. But I feel like a lot of these movements, they get a lot of attention at first, and then they just kind of die out.
Yeah.
I haven't really been following the March for Our Lives since we had our class about like a year and a half ago when it was like a big topic. Do you know what has happened to it like since?
I'm not sure specifically what it is. You know, they're still working. Obviously, I was on the website, and they're still, trying to create a conversation. And sadly, I think that we see the conversation coming up only when we're discussing a big shooting in America.
Yeah.
Discussing sort of what the implications of yet another shooting in America kind of mean and all that. So, I know that they're for sure still out there trying to get things changed and to create a conversation and to continue that conversation. So,
So we talked about the March for Our Lives, but there are obviously like a lot of different famous examples. What are some that like stand out to you?
So you have Me Too right here.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter is another one. Occupy Wall Street. I think that these are all really big, conversations that we're having in our society right now. We're seeing how culture has reacted, right? How people have changed, how the culture itself has reacted to creating a conversation that has largely been started on social media, and has become part of, just the norms of society and how they're all changing.
So how do these movements usually start and like pan out? Like what's the kind of typical, life cycle for?
I'm not sure specifically. And I think that everybody's movement kind of starts and ends and, keeps going differently.
Yeah.
But I do think that a lot of times, at least in the examples that we're talking about, maybe there's been a big, big, large scale event that has created a lot of attention, generated a lot of discussion. And that is what has become the reason that these movements have staying power, right? That the message is something that a lot of people can get behind, right? It's a big message. It's one that that is appealing to a lot of people, right? That is attractive in some way, that maybe somebody's had personal experience with that issue at one point in their lives. So, things like that are where you see the large kind of conversations about the issues that we've kind of addressed here.
Yeah. One of the most, I think I did actually a paper about the Me Too. Mm-hmm. I know I did. But it's been very fascinating as well to kind of follow the aftermath of that movement, because at first, it all started like 10 years before it actually broke the internet with a woman, I can't remember her name right now, Burke something, I think. I can't remember, but anyway, then obviously like with Harvey Weinstein and everything, it really became top of mind for a lot of people, and the internet kind of exploded.
Yeah.
But I think what are some of the dangers of this happening? Because obviously like it's great that it is happening and it brings attention to serious issues. But at the same time, I heard a lot of people being like falsely accused during the Me Too movement.
For sure.
Probably in other movements too, there's all these like claims going around, but everything's just happening so fast, so it's kind of hard to know what is true and what is not. I don't really know what my question is, but what do you think, how can we be better, or how can companies like Facebook or Twitter like do better to ensure that these things do not happen, I guess?
Yeah, well, I think that, to answer the first question, in any situation, any group of people that are coming together, in a public place, violence is always a possibility, right? That, somebody could get angry, that, tensions are high, and how, that can always be a threat to a group that's organizing for a particular cause, right? You never want it to happen, but we've seen instances where it does happen. So I think that is definitely something that could be a deterrent for people, right? That they, if you're somebody who wants to go to a march, or you're somebody who wants to go to a rally, that you would maybe think twice about it, because it's just such a you never know, right? Yeah, and it's scary to think about it, but that could for sure be something.
So how do these movements normally like leverage technology, I guess, to gain more attention?
Yeah.
And how has it changed over the last couple of years?
Twitter, obviously, is a big one. The ability to live stream and post and share and all that, I think, is super, super important, because it gives whoever's part of that particular movement the ability to share directly to their fans, right? That there's fans or followers or whatever, but that it's not coming from like the guy reporting the 6 o'clock news. It's not, you know, somebody on primetime TV giving you a summary of what happened that day. It's the opportunity for, you know, everyday people to get their voices out there, to have other people see what they are experiencing, how they are, you know, what is going on. We see riots all over the world, protests that are all being shared on social media, and, you know, in places where the media is a little more concerned with what people are reporting, there's the opportunity for activists to share on Instagram, hey, you know, this is what's going on right now at this moment. And that, I think, is super helpful for those of us who aren't there to get the real true story.
Yeah, for sure. So overall, what do you think this has meant for just freedom overall?
I mean, I think that it's great, right? I think that it gives, like I said, people who wouldn't otherwise have a platform to have a platform, that there's that they have the opportunity to, you know, share messages, share their you know, maybe a firsthand experience, an encounter, in ways that you didn't have 20, 30 years ago, the way that we have right now. I mean, everybody has the ability to, you know, log onto a Facebook page and share that information. And of course, the regulation of all of that, you know, those social media platforms is a whole other story. But the hope is that we can use these platforms in ways that are beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I had obviously there are so many like great examples of how people are using technology to bring awareness to serious issues. I mean, we mentioned a couple before. But I mean, there must also be a couple of examples of like people using it in a bad way. Mm-hmm. As we've said, like, it's easier than ever to organize movements, events, get people together, and especially, I think, find people everywhere in the world that maybe shares a similar worldview or shares your opinions. And if your opinions are, you know, racism or just you're out to hurt people are there any famous examples of that happening as well?
I mean, I think that we've seen, I don't know if I have any specific examples, but we've seen the use of social media to kind of, what would be the word?
Recruit
is a good word, to recruit people with extreme beliefs, alt-right ideologies that were once very, very marginalized, right, on the far fringes of what we, you know, you didn't hear about it all that often, right, because there was no specific platform for those opinions to be shared. But now that you have so many social media platforms, Twitter and 4chan and Reddit and all of that, you know, those who didn't have a platform now do. And that's, I think, dangerous, because it's not just, you know, somebody with very dangerous opinions or beliefs in their, you know, home sharing it to anybody who's in, like, earshot.
It's
somebody on a YouTube channel or a 4chan message board posting about stuff.
Yeah.
And creating a conversation and recruiting people with like-minded views.
It's super interesting. I wish I knew more about it to ask a better question.
Yeah.
But do you have anything else to add to what we've just been talking about? Because I'm obviously not smart enough to ask the good questions. Okay. So if you have anything else to add to that.
I think that this is, it's an interesting time to kind of see how all this is unfolding with social media, how people are using the platforms. I think that social media can get a bad rap, a lot of times I think that we think, oh, everybody's just on Instagram all day long, and it's there's no sustenance to it, or substance, or whatever you want to call it. And we're all just scrolling and clicking. But I think that people are using all of these things for good causes. I think that there's, you know, I can be a very critical person, but I'd like to think that we're using these platforms to raise awareness about issues, and that we recognize that it's up to us as individuals to, if we want to have our voices heard and we want to create change, that we have to do it ourselves, right?
Yeah.
That there aren't going to be the big corporations to be out there doing it for us. So it's a good way to use social media. I think that it's, you know, obviously it's not perfect, there are things that we can use it for in positive and beneficial ways.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked, even on this podcast, I've been pretty critical towards social media just because I have my own issues with it, and I don't like how addicted I am to it, I suppose. But as you said, like, it's easy to forget that people actually use it for good and use it for other things than just, you know, liking pictures of models. And I do think it empowers a lot of people that a couple of years ago would not have been able to express their opinions and actually get heard from other people around the world. Yeah, so let's just kind of leave that discussion. There's a lot more to talk about there, but I feel like we could go on all day about it. So another interesting form of civic engagement that we talked about in class a couple of years ago as well is something called culture jamming.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just explain what it is?
Yeah, so culture jamming is a really broad term. All these are very broad terms, but this one is very broad in the sense that it's the practice of that allows people to kind of subvert dominant ideologies about all sorts of things: consumerism, commodification, the environment, and to subvert the messages that we receive from these big industries, you know, think big corporations, big companies, the media, all of those things, and to take that information and subvert it in ways that speak truth to what's actually being, what we are actually seeing, right? So it's a way of being critical of the messages that we see in terms of, you know, what we should buy and how we should look. And it can be done in a variety of ways, right? The early culture jamming research kind of looked at, you know, billboards and advertisements, and how artists would go and kind of cover up the advertisements or spray paint new messages onto the ads, or come up with their own uses of the logo to create a new message that spoke to, you know, the lack of ethics, perhaps, of the company, or the true sort of motivations of what that company was doing. But it is, the point of it is to have people think more critically about the messages that they're being told by all the examples I just kind of mentioned.
Yeah. Are there any, like, famous examples that people who listen to this might know?
Well, the big example that at least I'm pretty familiar with is Pussy Riot, the band from Russia, who they were arrested for performed at a church, and their music was very critical, and they were in the news a lot it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Right? It comes up in conversation every once in a while, but they were very critical of Putin and some political things going on in Russia, and that was a, I would say, one example, right? That
they're
trying to take what people think traditionally about, you know, religion and politics and all that, and turning it into a message that is saying, like, hey, let's, you know, think differently about this, or we need to be more critical.
For sure. The one person that comes to mind is like Banksy, but I'm not sure if that's like culture jamming or just art.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thin line.
Yeah,
right?
I think
that there's Banksy's a great example, right? That he's, you know, trying to create messages about a variety of things. I know consumerism and the environment, and he's, I mean, his stuff goes for so much money. Yeah, it's very insane. Successful.
I'm sure you saw the painting that was just shredded to pieces after auction. That was pretty insane, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he's got a message. I think that there's a good value. I like it.
Yeah. Have we seen any other examples of this, like, throughout history?
Well, I was actually really interested in what Sacha Baron Cohen was doing. I know there were some examples. In his show, What is America? Right?
I have not. I've watched like some clips of some episodes, but I have not watched the whole thing yet. But I've been dying to. Like, it looks so funny. He's a genius.
So I think that's a really popular contemporary example of Sacha Baron Cohen, who is using his platform.
It's the guy who played Borat, by the way.
Yes. So Borat, he pretends to be different characters, right? I think we watched some clips where he's an Israeli, anti-terrorism expert. I think he pretended to be like a YouTuber in one of his videos, but he gets these public figures on his show, and there's some clips on YouTube. And all these people think that he is the person that they are, that he's pretending to be. They don't know it's actually Sacha Baron Cohen. And they are basically asked some questions and, you know, put in these situations that reveal not so good things about their identities. So,
I think he got one, like a politician from, I don't know, somewhere in the U.S. or a governor or whatever it was. He wanted to do this what was it called? Kindergartens program. Where we wanted like toddlers to be armed.
And you know, and he was interviewing, I don't know if it's the same one that I'm thinking of, because a Republican representative from Georgia did step down.
I think he got a few politicians who kind of stepped down.
Some politicians got in trouble for answering these questions thinking that this was an actual interview. You know, it had repercussions, right? But you're showing the true colors of some of those public figures, some of those politicians, and it's funny, and like we cringe while we watch it, but it's such a great way that somebody is using their platform to address the big issues that society is facing right now. And there's been some repercussions. I know that he tried to get Sarah Palin. I don't know if she did it.
I don't know. I've heard something about it. I've heard that he got her on, but then they canceled or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I think that once word is getting out.
Probably.
They're not so willing to.
Must be getting hard for him because he's so like recognizable as well.
Well, character.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, he's good at disguising himself.
Yeah.
We're going to be wrapping up here soon, but I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions. Is there a way, or do you have any advice to make sure that people, especially maybe younger generations, stay actively engaged in their communities, not just online?
Yeah, I think that it's always important to be aware of what's going on around you. I think that we have the ability to do that with the social media that we have today, that you can very easily look up a cause or some sort of movement and find out who the big people are in that movement, get in touch, and see how you can get involved. It's like I said, I think that people think that social media is such a bad, problematic thing for our society, and in some ways maybe that's the case, but it also works because it allows for people who don't have those big platforms, right, who don't have the access to primetime news or are able to get on to a big talk show to voice what their cause is to use social media, and we have access to all that information. So I think that we should use it to think about how things affect us directly and indirectly, right? What are the other communities around us that are being affected? How can they how can we be involved? How can we get involved with those issues as well? And alternative forms of media are great for that reason.
Right? Yeah.
You get access to all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily have access to if you didn't have that information.
Sure. Is your book out anywhere, by the way?
It is.
Or where can people get it?
So you can get it on Amazon.
Okay.
And you can get it from the publisher, which is Roman and Littlefield.
What's the name of the book, by the
way? It's called Contemporary Punk Rock Communities, Scenes of Inclusion and Dedication.
Okay, I will link it in the description, and yeah, make sure to get it. I will definitely get a copy after this.
It's cheaper from the publisher.
Okay.
So you can get it from
there. All right, you heard it here. And I guess, is there anything else I should have asked, but I didn't?
No, I think that you did a very good job. It was a lot of fun. It's been a few months since I've really talked about all this stuff.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I just feel like I shouldn't be asking questions. I should just be sitting here listening and learning.
But
thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. And good luck on the conference.
Thank you.
Have a great Christmas and a good New Year.
You too. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around, hey, I'll make a more day. I get one down in a second if you wait. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around here, I'll make a more day. I get one down in a second if you wait. Sometimes I think sitting on trains. Every stop I get to, I'm clocking that game. Everyone's a winner.